Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. Hope you are doing well, whatever you are doing. I do have some exciting news. Thanks to my friend Randall over at RCR Video, I've got a new dope studio that I'll be recording in. He is a new sponsor of the show, and I'm sure he'll be sending me some coffee. I'm sure he'll be sending me some copy shortly so I can tell you specifically how they can help you with your video needs. But they're an awesome video production company. I interviewed him for this show. But in the meantime, I'm excited because as much as I like recording on my porch or the Beltline or whatever I've done over these years, and I'll still continue to do so, I've always liked the idea of having a little studio with those mics that sit in front of your face and you talk to them with the thing and the thing and the thing. On today's program, Nate Hibble. Nate was a recommendation of, I think, Patrick. Patrick, who's referred Chris Hall, who we already had on, and some other great people. But Nate, if you looked at the intro, former pro quarterback, currently food dude, and I think that's all I'm going to say, because you know me, I don't like to give it all away in the front end. So why don't you go listen? Nate and I had a very pleasant chat. It's been a couple of months, but here it is now. Nate and I, outside of WeWork, very midtown, very Atlanta happening place. Away we go.
So tell everybody where we are, for starters. We'll sort of set the mood here.
We are sitting outside in Midtown, 1372 Peachtree. We're at a WeWork space, right. shared office space here. Right.
Did you work in Yellowstone?
No. I recently went on a little vacay. One of my roommates actually owns a place in Montana. So went out there to just be outside. And if you go to a place like Yellowstone, you got to buy a hat, dude.
I'm just not a hat guy. I would buy a T-shirt. I'm just not a hat. People like send me hats, and I'm like
one of those too.
I give that to my kids. You got kids?
No.
Are you single?
Kids. No, I have a gal.
Okay. Yeah. I have a gal. What a southern phrase. Where did you go to high school?
I grew up in South Georgia, real small town, Hazelhurst, Georgia. Jeff Davis High School. You know, I mean, it's a weird thing to think back, but we gave Jefferson Davis a nickname.
Jeff
Davis County. I recently was down there. They retired my high school football jersey, so I was honored, and it was really neat to feel like I was kind of coming home. It hadn't felt like home just because my mom and dad left there about 20 years ago, and kind of right. Where your mom and dad go.
That I'm going to take a stab here. Were you at 12?
A number?
Yeah.
I was 16.
16.
I was 16 in high school. 8 in college, and I was lucky enough to play in the NFL. I had a couple different numbers.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, and I know you're a little bit younger than me, but when I was growing up, it was all 12s and 14s. And this new, to me, it's like the new generation, like Vic was like a 2, right? And then it kind of started all the guys like twos and eights. And
I don't really know.
Or maybe Steve Young was an eight.
Montana was 16.
Right.
Which I think was probably some early inspiration for me. I honestly ended up as eight on any football cards and throughout. most of my like football history because at Oklahoma they literally were like, "This number is going to be available next year," and I was like, "Okay, I guess I'm eight." You know.
All right. So. Well, I want to get there, but I want to back up a little bit. So like, who like were you? So for me, so I played East Marietta Rams when I was 75 pound whatever, and it was it for me. It was like I'm gonna be a football player, Mom. Like that was it. So was that you at that age?
No, my dad was our town's high school football coach. My brother and I have a brother. He's 2 years younger than me. My brother and I did everything together growing up, and I never thought. My dream was to play on the PGA Tour.
Really?
Yeah. We played every sport we could growing up, and that's one of the sad commentaries of today's youth sports is that these people get so focused on one sport, and I'm a big proponent in playing as many sports as you can until something forces you not to do that. But we played baseball, basketball, golf, football, and in South Georgia we fished as well. Not a hunter, but my dream job growing up was to – I always wanted to have as many shirts in the closet, crisp polos. I wanted to be able to dress like a pro golfer and have as many fresh Titleists in my bag as possible.
That was it.
That was like the dream growing up was wanted to be a pro golfer. And I was chasing that. I mean, my brother and I were both good junior golfers. And my bro ended up playing on, at the time, what was a nationwide tour, but he had an injury that set him back. He is now the head men's golf coach at the University of Oklahoma, which is where I played college football. So, bizarre universe.
And where, and then who were your guys back then?
Who were my...
Golf guys. Who did you want to be?
Oh, who did I want to be? Yeah.
You got to not play with that cord, by the way. It'll make noise if you...
Sorry.
It's okay. It's a habit, so...
Fred Couples. I love Freddie.
Right.
Growing up, my mom thought he was cute. I loved how relaxed he was. Never seen a guy grab his britches as many times as he does during a round. You know, he walks around just very casually in his golf.
Just a regular dude.
Casual. I heard he's a good cat in real life. So I love Freddie. And Paul Azinger was one of my guys as well. He had a real unique golf swing, a different game. He hit the ball really low. So Zinger and Freddie Couples early.
Right. You know, there's a famous golfer that actually went to my high school, and I can't remember who it is now.
Not too famous, you know? I mean.
I might have to get out Wikipedia. It's never good audio when someone has to go to the phone and do Wikipedia, but if I can do it fast enough. It won't, because it's not Fred Couples, but as soon as you said that name, if I Google my high school, you see who famous went there. Like, I don't know, have you done that lately?
No, I haven't done that.
Of course, my goal is that one day my name will be on there.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that...
Do you show up under your...
I had one of my friends, I've had a couple of my friends in the past say, dude, have you Wikipedia'd yourself recently? You know, first of all, it's cool to be Wikipedia-able. That's, you know, an honor. That's pretty cool.
Right.
But the I don't know what it says, and I've never contributed to it. But like two of my friends said it said that you worked at a local pizza joint, which was true because I was running the Little Ozio's business, like part of my path to discovering what would become Gusto, which is my current entrepreneurial journey we're on. We haven't gotten there yet, but and my buddies were like really sticking up for me. They were like, it didn't say anything about what you'd done. It just said Nate currently, you know, works at a local pizza joint. And then it's like really humbling, and I was like, wow, you know, that's real. I don't know who had the balls to put that on there,
right?
Or who took that vested interest,
right?
Somebody was paying attention.
Right. All right, I'm going to quickly look because it's a bunch that I don't know because it's after me and I wasn't paying attention.
Bob Tway, yeah.
There you go.
Bob Tway, man. So I think Bob Tway, dude, know. Did he end up? Did he go to Oklahoma State?
Bob Tway, PG. Let's click on him.
He has a son right now who is also a great. He was young golfer.
Okay, so he was born in Oklahoma City.
There you go.
He went to Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
arch nemesis
of Oklahoma
the Sooners.
All right, so let's back up. So you want to be a golfer, but somewhere along the line, someone said, "Hey, you're 6'4" and you got a decent arm." And
yeah, honestly, I'll never forget. I was getting scholarship offers in golf, and then I was 6'4", 190. I wasn't huge, but I had a pretty big arm, and a lot of those. This is pre, obviously, social media, even pre-combines and things of that nature. So really your physical, tangible attributes went a long way. But our offense was somewhat like the wing tee, so we didn't throw it very much, going back to the path that I chose was I think I ended up choosing football because golf is a very lonely sport, and it just didn't. I wanted to be in a locker room. I wanted to have teammates, and I wanted to play on Saturdays in a stadium full of 100,000 people. And sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for, because I ended up there, and then there's good things and bad things that come with that too. But I was, privileged to have the opportunity to have some choice. And once college football seemed like it was becoming a reality, I went up to Athens, Georgia, graduated high school early. Before I went to Oklahoma, I went to the University of Georgia. This is a long time ago now, so I feel like I has been. But I went to Athens and ended up transferring to OU.
Right. And was that because Georgia had a starting quarterback situation and you wanted to play? Like, I know that's why guys transfer.
Yeah, I mean, really, when you're young and dumb, like, you swear you are supposed to be on the field. But, most folks shouldn't be touching foot on that field until they're, a junior. You got to get some age and experience under you. I thought I was capable and ready, and I was in the competition battle with a guy named Quincy Carter, who ended up being a Dallas Cowboy, and he's famous and infamous amongst UGA supporters. But I was in that battle, and we didn't know who the starter was going to be until about 2 weeks before that home opener, and then they ended up redshirting me, and it looked like Quincy was going to be the starter there for the next 2, 3, 4 years, whatever. So started looking around, and Bob Stoops, he had been Steve Spurrier's defensive coordinator at Florida, and Coach Spurrier had offered me a scholarship, so I'd met Coach Stoops, and Coach Stoops was about to
awake this sleeping giant at OU.
Spurrier was at Florida.
Right, and Spurrier is kind of a quarterback guy.
I know.
So that didn't make you feel pretty good?
Telling Spurrier, it made me feel great that he offered me, but telling him no was a really hard thing.
Because you wanted to stay Georgia?
I think there was some home state pride, but it was a little bit more of a business move. He had a guy named Jesse Palmer, who you folks might know from ESPN, analyst these days.
Did he play for the Bengals?
And Doug Johnson.
Did Jesse Palmer play for the Bengals?
I can't remember. The point is he had two freshmen, and Spurrier was rotating the starters at the time. Like, you'd play two snaps, and then you'd come out, and then he'd put the next guy in.
The old, what, they do that with Don Meredith and Staubach or whatever back in the day?
That would be so hard. So
he did it every play at one point.
Yeah, stylistically, I wasn't really about that. And then he had young talent. So I guess going to Georgia was my first ever, business move. And then moving, transferring to Oklahoma was also kind of a business move.
So Stoop said, "You're my guy. If I take you, you're going to start."
No, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. Those guys can't ever say that because they're recruiting all kinds of folks, and may the best, man get the job at the time.
I thought that was their whole thing, is they sit in your kitchen with your mom. And
yeah.
Do they do all that?
They shouldn't. They're, full of you-know-what if they do. It's very similar to my employees. I don't make any promises. We just say, we're gonna make you better, and what you do with your time is up to you. So I was involved in quarterback battles out at OU, and I won a couple and I lost a couple, and so it was a wild ride. I really don't think about it that much these days. And then I ended up being fortunate enough to be a Cleveland Brown for almost 3 years as a backup to Tim Couch and Kelly Holcomb. Kelly Holcomb ended up becoming one of my investors in Gusto. And then I spent about a half year with Jacksonville Jaguars, which took me closer to Hazelhurst. All this was about 10 years ago now.
So. Wow. So where were you drafted?
Wasn't drafted, was almost got drafted right around the seventh round. Most people don't know, there used to be a bunch of rounds, but I was I think technically called an undrafted free agent. I had a handful of teams call in Cleveland, like we kind of inked a deal or shook hands metaphorically over the phone with the quarterback coach for the Browns, and I wanted to go there. So
why did you want to go
there?
There's
still signing bonuses and things of that nature, but there's a select group that maybe don't, that right on the bubble of getting drafted or not drafted that end up getting signed pretty quickly. So why did I want to go there? The quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, Bruce Arians, who was most recently with the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, he was the offensive coordinator, and he was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator with the Colts for a long time. So, I don't know, I like the fit, I like their scheme, and super, super duper complex, man. You get an NFL playbook.
Were you sitting around on draft day?
Yeah. I was sitting around, but I mean, the expectations were you kind of know where you may or may not go or when a phone call may or may not happen. I'd finished up my career, my college career had some ups and downs, but I finished up being named Most Valuable Player of the Rose Bowl in my senior year. So that was a culminating.
So it's nice to finish on a high note.
Yeah, it was a really cool title to have next to your name forever. You know, frankly, I don't like talking about it a lot, but
unless you're Reggie Bush.
Yeah, I guess they can strip certain things, you know.
Well, and you know, that's actually, like, I didn't even know there was a great, I think it was a 30 for 30 on the Fab Five, and I didn't know they took their shit away. See, I didn't even know that. You didn't either, apparently.
Yeah,
and so they still, you know, the best, I mean, you know the Fab Five are.
Oh, yeah.
The best line in that, the whole thing. Because I grew up, that's my era. So I was a senior in high school in 1990, right? So that's my era. And the best thing that, I think it was Jalen, but one of them at the end goes, look, it's 20 years later. Everybody still talking about the Fab Five. Who were the starting five in last year's NCAA tournament?
Right.
You can't. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't even matter what year he said that.
Right.
Like, that was 2 years ago, but this year.
About, they had a brand.
Well,
there was a brand. The Fab Five is a name and a brand.
And
it's memorable.
And what they did, and then what they would go on to do for good and for bad. I mean, it's just one of those, like, I mean, I kind of feel like we do have this. I mean, I don't know how much sports you watch now. I watch.
Not a lot.
Me either. I hate talking heads, and that's all across the board. When I come home and my wife's watching CNN and it's 80 idiots yelling at me, and I feel the same way about sports, I can't watch pregame for football because I don't need to see five people's opinions. I'm watching the kickoff, right? 2 weeks lead up to Super Bowl, I don't watch shit. Super Bowl starts, boom, I'm in. So I like Mike and Tony. I like PTI. You watch those guys?
They're good. They have enough chops, and I feel like they're closer to journalists. All the crap now is, I mean, they're not commentators, and they're not, you know, it's entertainment.
Right.
So I see it for what it is.
But what I appreciate about those two guys is they admit when they don't know something. And that to me is the whatchamacallits, you know, the Colin Cowards and the, what's that angry asshole's name? Like, they know something about everything.
Skip Bayless.
All of them, right? Yeah, doesn't matter the name, right?
Right.
These guys come on, and like when it's a soccer story, they admit they don't fucking watch soccer, or a NASCAR story. Tony doesn't even stay up late if it's on the West Coast. You know what I mean? They bust each other's balls.
Yeah,
like,
so candid. To me,
they're real.
Yeah, the authenticity comes through.
Right, and these other talking heads like are experts in everything. So let's back up a little bit. So, you know, the reason I asked you, I mean, I know it's a while ago, and we're certainly going to talk about what you're up to now, but obviously, knowing you're a football guy, I've got to talk a little bit about football. And again, like as I've gotten older, every other sport has fallen away, and NFL is the only thing I even pay attention to. And now that I have three kids, it's like less and less. Like I had season tickets to the Falcons for 2 years, and then like third kid came along, and it's like, honey, you're not going to be fucking gone every Sunday.
Priorities,
right?
Priorities, baby. Well, I don't. You know, I'm probably your most non-sporty sports guy who has that in his pedigree or history. I don't really pay attention. Part of it is, and you'll get this from a lot of former players. I mean, when you're under the microscope, and it was at the beginning of the amount of attention that a young person gets, 365 days a year, not 10 days a year, right? And you know, that's where I say you got to be careful what you wish for. It might come true. A lot of former players get super fatigued, and they just don't even want to go down that path. No one want to talk about it. Don't want to watch it. I went through that. The pageantry that comes with college football and the brands that come with the different colleges, those are still pretty cool to me. I mean, I like the bands and the sights and the sounds and the stadiums and those brands and all those cities and the pride associated with that is pretty neat. But once I made it to the NFL, and I was no big time stud up there or anything, but I got up there, it was hard to really pay much attention to anything other than the NFL, because to be the, you know, and to be around the best of the best of the best of the best of the best, you know, that 1% of the 1% of the 1 is so elite and is so cool. Yeah, I'm very proud of that accomplishment.
At Jacksonville or Cleveland, was there anyone you played with that had been around a while that you were like kind of like a little bit in awe of, or that you got to like, hey, this is pretty cool, like playing with this guy?
I mean, the quarterbacks were always my guys. Like I said, Tim Couch was the number one draft pick for the Cleveland Browns, and he had been through a lot of shit, and he was supposed to be X, Y, and Z, and he was not. But he was with an expansion team, you know. It's hard for that number one draft pick. Usually you get thrown on the worst team, right? That doesn't make much sense. So I was really tight with Tim Couch, and like I said, Kelly Holcomb, he had a 12-year career, ended up being one of our early investors in Gusto when I showed him a deck and showed him what I was, you know, going to be chasing. Byron Leftwich down with the Jaguars, and Dave Girard, those were also my guys. So, once you – in college, it's this way these days, and definitely at pro ball, it's your teams within a team. Like us quarterbacks, we met – We offense like practiced way different and aside from the defense, and the defense was their own, you know, all these teams within teams. So I just spent every waking hour in the quarterback's room, and we called it Podge Lodge up in Cleveland. And you know, I was just really having the time of my life being a rookie, being called a rookie. When Butch Davis was our head coach, said we're gonna call you up this week. You know, you're gonna be active, and we were going to play the 49ers in San Fran, and that was a really cool moment. And I was just living, you know, trying to understand the magic that was happening to me. And it wasn't long lived, and I didn't make a fortune or anything like that, but it was really cool.
You know, I'm always fascinated, even at the college level, when someone comes in a backup situation, unless it's, you know, a 12-year guy that does it all the time, but when it's a new guy and the quarterback gets hurt, and I always think, man, it's like 5 seconds ago he was just throwing balls on the bench, and now like everyone is like looking at you. I mean, it's interesting, we use the phrase the quarterback in all situations, like in business or whatever. So did you have those situations, and what's that like to just, you got to run on the snap and act like you got it going on, because they're looking at you to lead, literally lead you.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard to come in cold. You have to have been coached to have the mentality that could happen at any moment. It happened to me in a preseason game against Brett Favre-led Packers. Threw my first preseason touchdown pass, and Favre was standing over there. But the guy that was in front of me, his name is Josh Booty, played at LSU, he got his hand, I wasn't expecting to go in, but he got his hand ripped apart on somebody's helmet, and, you know, it was like next man up. So all of a sudden I'm in there, and first play from scrimmage, Bruce Arians calls a bomb. And
where were you on the field? Where were you on the field?
We were on our own 30. Again, it's Saturday night, I think. The Packers are in town. And deep play action pass, and I step up in the pocket, but I'm going to throw the deep comeback because the middle of the field was closed. It was cover one or cover three. So the deep post was off, so I'm throwing the comeback, and I get the running back whiffs the block. Guy hits me in the back, like classic NFL moment. Hits me in the back, ball goes up in the air, and some fat defensive lineman catches it. So
first like play first, ever turnover.
No, it wasn't. No. I had been in other games and completed a couple passes, but in this big moment, it was like it was like a poster. Yeah, it was like poster child of welcome to the NFL. You know, bitch. You know? Guy hit me in the back. Ball pops out of my hand. You know, it was like you're not ready for this. But then I engineered a couple drives and we scored a couple touchdowns and we won. So that was a cool memory. So
an old. Old number four was across there?
Yeah.
Did you shake his hand afterwards?
I think I got a fist bump or something. There were so many people. I wish that I had. I wish I'd had a little bit more courage to just own it when I was up there. I was much more of a yes sir, no sir, you know, kind of guy.
Well, we are like that down here.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Well, my mom and dad are from Iowa. So I grew up, even though I grew up in South Georgia, I grew up a little bit in a Midwestern type home. I never thought that Atlanta would end up being, you know, home, and I'm not sure how long I'll be here, but I've been here now for approximately 10 years, and I've watched this sucker change from creeping out of a recession to like the bustling, blossoming city that we see. I mean, my goodness, has it changed, right?
Yeah, well, I was gone. So I'm from Boston, but I grew up here. I went to high school here, obviously. And then I was gone for 10 years, and which was basically like the hip-hop years, like when Atlanta got to be known for like I missed all that, right?
Mid-90s?
Yeah, I missed all that. I was in Boston and then L.A., and when I came back, it was kind of like the start of what you're talking about, right? Movies come here. We have a real restaurant scene. We have all this stuff that makes us this thriving. And then everywhere I look, like I was just, so I just went for a run at Chastain, and even what they're building there, I was like, it's like never ending. It's never
Seems
ending.
Like it.
Right?
Yeah, I don't really know where the end, I think the end comes with the next economic hiccup.
Right.
Dare I say it, but
but we know it's coming, right? It's like the West End now.
Like
these
it.
Houses are going for insane amounts, and they just can't. It's just life. That's just how things go.
It will auto-correct itself, whatever that means,
right?
At some point. But pretty proud of where the city is headed. It's progressive, innovative. I feel like the South has been a little bit asleep. It's kind of waking up a little bit.
Right. Kind of like you referred to the old Oklahoma football program.
Yeah, well, Bob Stoops, that was 20 years ago, but he went and woke a sleeping giant, a beast.
Right.
They had, you know, Oklahoma's won a bunch of national championships in the 50s, 60s, and then in the 80s with Barry Switzer. So Bob went and awoke, and that's why I ended up going out there. Just when I went out there, the fans started chanting my name at the spring game. I was like, these people are hungry, man. And they were, and they still are.
Did you have a nickname?
I've had a bunch of nicknames over the years. In high school, it was Tater. I haven't thought about that in a long time. A couple of my buds called me Tater. Usually, it's been Hibbs. My last name's Hibble, and that's a weird one. It's vowelless, and people
and
mispronounce
short.
It.
It's hard to have a nickname when you got such a short.
Yeah. Nate Dogg, Hibbs, Natron, you know, Skate when I was young, Nate Skate. So I love nicknames. I'm a nickname kind of guy.
You give your staff nicknames?
I have to be careful about that, but I just love nicknames. My favorite is Bubba. My dog passed away a year and a half ago. His name wasn't Bubba, but I love the endearing nature of nicknames. It is a
right. Well, that's one thing.
makes people feel, extra layer of connectedness.
I concur, and especially when it doesn't make much sense, and like sometimes people don't even like, people go, why do they call you that? And you go, you know, I've been called that for so long.
Yeah,
if you end up having kids, I can tell you that's sort of this natural thing that happens that you honestly don't even know why, and you just start, you know what I mean? Like, usually it's some version of their name, and then right. It just goes somewhere else.
I think it's convenience based, you know, but then it's also, it is a, if it's unique to you guys, then nicknames are, not kidding, it's a love language, man, you know?
I mean, it's interesting you say that. Like, I'm thinking about my daughter. So my daughter's name's Emma. And so, like, Emma Boo is natural, but then we started calling her Emma Lou. Now, Lou's not her middle name, but she'll, you know, I'll probably call her that when she's, you know, my age now. Like, Emma Lou, that's who she is, right?
Right. That's cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's you guys' own language, and I almost all of my friends have nicknames. I like to use initials just to see how things stack up.
Initials, it seems to be like the lazy nowadays version, though, right? Wow. Like, once upon a time, are you taking that as an insult?
No, I'm just sitting here thinking, like communication is getting lazy.
Well, right,
clearly.
But like, because once upon a time, I'm trying to think of the first, so like, who were the first, like, for some reason, like, T-Mac is coming to mind, but like, basketball player, yeah. Tracy McGrady,
yeah.
But like, before him, like, maybe MJ, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the first ones, then everybody started doing it, and it's like, oh, that's not even a real, it's not even a real nickname.
I think, you know, Prince, Madonna. I mean, these guys had the audacity to be one named. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
Think about Elvis. You know, I think a lot of this stuff comes from entertainment.
Right.
But, it's all about that personal brand. And, you know, I don't know what's making me think of this, but I think going back to Oklahoma, of all things, I ended up, so OU played Georgia this year in the Rose Bowl. 2017 at the end of this past year, and I was fortunate enough to be down on the sidelines as a former MVP of that game. It was really unique for me to be on the OU sidelines. Half that stadium was UGA fans,
right.
And they knew my name or my brother's name or because of unique last name. That was an epic game to be at, and 20 years after having played on that same field, it was really cool, but where the hell am I going with this? I'm going with Baker Mayfield is we talk about brands and we talk about nicknames. We talk about interjecting humor and using it to your advantage. I think he's one of the most brilliant like leveragers, if that's a word, of social media and being a cult villain and using it to his advantage. He's actually a hell of a guy in real life.
Right.
I don't think most people understand. He's a really good dude and he stands for a lot of really good things, and I'm not even one of his spokespeople, but I'd never been around him till I was out of the Rose Bowl, and you know, he's the kind of guy that calls me sir and recalled me playing catch with him when he was a younger kid, and you know, I'm fascinated. You could go all the way to the top with Donald Trump, but the world has changed so much, so now we have athletes that are absolute influencers. Like around the world, and Baker's a great example of, like him or not, great example of leveraging status to build your brand. And I don't think he'd have been the number one draft pick had he not been so brilliant at that piece of it.
There's so many things I want to talk about now. This is so much you said
sorry.
There. That was so, no, it's great. This is great stuff. So first of all, I got to back up a little bit. I just realized that if you did the Rose Bowl, it means that you got to hear Keith Jackson say your name. So that's fucking awesome,
yeah.
Right? Like, did you go back and watch it?
The granddaddy.
Right. Cool, Nelly.
You know, I haven't seen it in a long time, but the coolest thing, they had the B-2 bomb. They had the bomber go over just like they did this year. But that is a really sweet-ass special place out there, man. It's just nestled in the valley, and the weather's just crisp.
Yeah, I used to live in L.A. I've been to the Rose Bowl a couple times.
God, it's so money.
I was going to ask if you went to the championship game here.
I didn't go to the national championship. I went to the SEC championship. I watched Georgia, the Georgia Auburn game, stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium here is so phenomenally impressive. I usually don't get blown away by. I like older stadiums. Like I love Green Bay's old stadium. I love Kansas City, the Chiefs' old stadium, but. This Mercedes-Benz is pretty legit. I mean, it's pretty silly that it's built right next to it, you know, the other one.
Which is only 20 years old. I went to the first concert at that I went to see U2 at that at 1992 at that at the Dome.
The Dome.
So, yeah, I was kind of I have a love-hate relationship with it, especially because that's my neighborhood. When you come over the hill there, it just sort of greets you. I think somebody called it a transformer.
It looks like a transformer. It's architecturally unique. You see it from an airplane. See it from space, probably, but. And obviously, crazy traction here with soccer these days. But anyway, growing up in South Georgia, the dome meant something,
right? Because at the end of the year, you got to play there.
Yeah, the dome,
championship
the dome
game
was a big deal. But also, so was the Macon Mall where I'm from. So, I mean, seriously.
All right, so I promise we'll get to Gusto stuff, but just because we're you know, the quarterback.
Random, interesting.
Well, because this idea of, you know, you get the number one draft pick, it's an absolute fucking coin flip. Cleveland's a great example who's had multiple cracks at it, right? And here's what I want to see what your insight is on is that there's so much that goes into it, you know, to try to like fully appreciate something like the Patriots, right? To be so good for so long, right? And other teams, like just making it to the playoffs every year is a victory. And when a coach gets their team to the playoffs for 2-3 years and then he doesn't 1 year and they fire him, I'm like, dude, there's guys that would fucking dream of, right? I'm just going to pick a guy, okay, and you just tell me. So Jay Cutler comes to mind, yeah. Right? Because, again, there's so many pieces. There's coaching. There's the system. There's who's around him.
Right.
So
first word that comes to mind is turd. I'm dead serious. He might be a hell of a guy, but I only get that from body language. I don't know him, but his body language is horrible. He's not a good leader. Not a good leader. He's crazy talented. He can throw the deep dig as well as, you know, I've ever seen. I mean, great release. And I mean, no offense to the guy. He might be a hell of a guy, but I've just from my point of view, since you're asking me, seems like a bad leader. Don't enjoy watching him. Can't root for him. You know, some might say that about Baker, but like if you're for him, they're passionately for him. And if you're against him, you're passionately against him. Cutler is more like a zero passion guy. That's what I feel. So anyway.
But if you're not built, if
is
you're
not, he not your hero, is he?
Jay Cutler's not my hero. Again, like I grew up in a different era, right? Although Brady, obviously, like, you know, I'm from Boston, and then Brady comes along, this like gift, right?
I mean, that if we're going to talk about the Patriots, I mean, that's a machine that is unlike any other. I mean,
in any sport
ever. I mean, I've never heard about it, read about it. I mean,
and again, this is what I try to like. Because even like yeah they're great and they're kind of the Yankees now, they're easy to hate, because if you look at all the, you know, the quote unquote dynasties, right, Packers, Cowboys, Niners, it's mostly right a starting cast, right? And the if you look at the number of receivers that Brady has thrown to over the years or who they stick in the backfield, it kind of doesn't matter, and no other team does that.
It's wild, man. It is wild. He is bar none the greatest quarterback of all time. Every time he touches the field, he thinks he's going to win. He usually does. He is. I'm happy to see that it seems like he's becoming more human, you know, which it's got to be better on the home front, because I just pictured him up until very recently almost like a friggin' robot, man. I mean, you could. It's kind of like Tiger Woods back in the heyday. I mean, you almost have to be a robot. Those are the elite of the elite of all time. So it's hard to describe. I don't. Whenever players get spit out of the Patriots program, I call it a program because it's very much like a college or a high school team, the way Belichick runs it. And they bitch and moan about not having fun. You know, that may be true. You know, they're also they have. Belichick has a one of a kind. Of course, he got it from a handful of other coaches, but the DNA of that program and that brand is it's our way or the highway, baby. obviously. And that is hard to do with grown-ass men. That was one of the first things I noticed when I got in the huddle, NFL huddle. Not only were these guys 6'7 and 6'8, but they had like three kids, you know? And I was 22.
Right.
And not close to wife and kid. You know, they're like, you know, what are you trying to tell me, punk? You know, I have three mortgages and four kids. One of them's in private school, you know? Like, and as big as you right now, you know? So it is really unique from my perspective to see, again, love it, hate it, whatever, you have to respect the fact that he has taken grown-ass professionals and bent them to his will and his program and had, unmatched results.
Yeah, when Randy Moss went there, I was like, that's going to be a disaster. And what happened? They fucking lit it up.
Lit it up, man. I don't...
I'm still not over that Super Bowl loss, by the way.
They obviously have really... I bet they have some really interesting, like, entrance and exit interviews. I mean, I feel like there is some... I feel like there's some Hunger Games shit going on. You know what I mean? Like, there's some brainwashing, you know? In a very program-oriented kind of way. It's like, you are either going to live in the Capitol and thrive as a citizen of the Capitol, right, or you're going out to District 12.
So when does either one of those guys, Belichick or Brady, go out? That's what I keep kind of thinking about lately.
I think Brady thought he was, Iron Man, but I read something recently, I think on ESPN, he said, you know, the end is creeping up on him. And I think it's just the hits, man. And we're all a little bit worried about our heads and the beatings, our body, you know, knees and shoulders and elbows, ankles, those are all real things that affect our daily lives. But when your speech starts skipping a beat and your writing starts wandering, you know, that's kind of real life stuff that is super scary, man.
Right.
It's really scary.
So that's a perfect segue to talk about, you know, obviously, even when I assume that when you're young, you think you're going to go forever, even if you're not starting or whatever. So at what point do you start thinking about what am I going to do when this ride's over?
I didn't start thinking about that soon enough. If I was ever going to write a book, it would probably be about that. There is, you know, it sounds ridiculous to say it, but I think there's post-traumatic stress associated with you've been in the limelight as an athlete for the last 10 or 15 years of your life. And unless you were really proactive and you're really getting after it, it just kind of ends. You know, it just kind of ends, and it's really weird. And it's really sad for a lot of guys. And for me personally, I realized pretty quickly that I was not going to be happy sitting behind an office desk. I wasn't going to be fulfilled selling insurance or working at a bank. And no offense to anybody who does that, because I wasn't going to be satisfied until I found a passion. And I went and worked on the subcontracting world for a low voltage company. I had no idea what I was doing, but what I was doing was learning more and more about myself and the fact that I could have gone in the real estate world. I could have gone and done this, that, or the other, that typical path, you know? And
so were you just doing manual labor?
No. I was a sales guy.
Okay.
I was a sales guy. But the passion wasn't there, and I didn't intentionally mean to, you know, segue into this, but I had been experimenting in my kitchen, and I had been, you know, just everybody you know has good ideas, and some like to share it, and you know, actually getting out there and acting on and executing it and birthing something is the definition of entrepreneur versus, you know, idea person. It took me 4 or 5 years to work up the courage, the money, the knowledge, the experience in the restaurant business to create what I wanted ultimately as a consumer, which was better for you, affordable fast food. It just doesn't exist, and I didn't understand why not. So right or wrong, crazy, it took me to some deep, dark places at the bottom. I went through a divorce. Lost a lot of money during the recession, and I just kept chasing this dream. And
did you have a super pretty blonde wife?
Super pretty blonde wife?
Yeah, that seems to be
no.
That seems to be the
I'm uncharacteristic
quarterback don't, trajectory
don't
or NFL
book,
or any NFL player. Like whenever you see the wife, it's like, oh look, a gorgeous blonde.
Don't judge this book by its seeming cover. Like no, my ex-wife, which I didn't think we'd be talking about right now, is she Lebanese.
Okay.
She was also an entry. Her family's entryway into like culinary awakening for me, and the food that no more meat and potatoes, and no more, you know, just vegetables and fruits out of a can. The lemon and the garlic and the parsley and the.
What about the food at the Macon Mall?
Macon Mall, like I just recall Arby's and Burger King, and the Macon Mall represented freedom. That's what the Macon Mall represented.
Your mom would drop you off?
No, it would just be like a field trip or like a school trip or something, you know? When they drop you off and they let, you know, they let you run around for, you know, an hour and then meet back up. That was my little first doses of freedom coming from growing up in a town of 3,000 people, defined by its caution lights. You know what a caution light is?
Caution light.
Caution light. That's what they call it. A caution light is the yellow blinking caution light.
Right.
You know.
So I had
anyway, we're going back.
No, this is good. I had a job, again, you're talking early 90s, and I had to like, it was like my sister worked for an energy company. I had to do these surveys, and you go to these houses, and you're supposed to find out, are you good on time? You okay? You okay?
I got to get going in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're just getting to the good stuff, but
sorry.
It's okay. Or the current stuff. Anyway, real quick, I'm in this town and it's got one light and I couldn't find this address, and I just pulled up to these people and I was like, hey, I'm looking for such and such road. And the guy's like, who you hunting? I was like, excuse me? He's like, who you hunting?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the Smiths. He's like, oh, all right, well. And then he told me exactly how to get there because I've been in that town, knew everybody. But I want to, so real quickly.
Who you hunting?
Right? So when you say what you said, what you just described didn't exist, what would you say about Chipotle?
I would say that they were they were a version of what was called fast casual. But,
right.
The future Gusto is, God willing, going to be drive throughable. So what makes Gusto different? You don't see it now in our restaurants, but. What I wanted to invent was something you didn't necessarily have to get your car out of your car to get a couple of bowls to get grilled chicken. Chipotle could never have a drive-through because you build a modular. You know, you're not going to stand in line behind 30 people trying to put together that order in a drive-through. So I bow down to these giants that have been around for. Chipotle's been around for 20 years now, and those guys blaze the way.
There was only McDonald's and Burger King 20 years ago.
Yeah, there are hundreds of fast casual concepts that have been slowly changing the way Americans eat and giving better options. We are not pioneering. You know, we are just a small part of the wave. But I would like to say that we're on the front edge of the wave here in the South. The city isn't bustling with healthy food, you know, and healthy. Concepts.
I can tell you that I live in the West End, as we said. Our Kroger does not look like the Kroger on the east side of town.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's interesting. I don't know. I mean,
bullshit.
The whole
that my wife can't get good produce at our Kroger.
The Whole Foods in Buckhead doesn't look anything like the Whole Foods on Ponce. And, you know, that's a real shame. But I think it's because a lot of the folks in Buckhead, they want mac and cheese and they want what's become the purpose in my life is to try to get folks out of their own way, and I can say that because I was one. I'm a living testimony of I firmly believe that most people like most things on the food side, regionally based or not. I truly believe that folks like most ingredients. They're scared of their own shadow, man, and. It's not condescending. It's more along the lines of like, come with me. Like, let me. There's a reason why I didn't like Brussels. There's a reason why. You know, I mean, seriously, it came out of a can from Piggly Wiggly. You know, but I grew up hating tomatoes and mushrooms and these things, and now I can't live without them. And I just, Gusto is my iteration of sharing flavor with folks.
Why did you pick Ponce?
For that location?
Isn't that the first one?
No, the first one is down here on Peachtree across the street from Piedmont Hospital. That was where we launched. I picked both of those locations because it's obviously the main arteries of town, you know. G1, as we affectionately call Gusto number one, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital. High traffic area, really weird shopping center. Restaurants have failed there for years. We have a thriving business there, thank the Lord. And then Ponce, I didn't really choose it. You know, real estate is really hard, especially when you're the little guy. We kind of lucked up, got an opportunity with an old building and a business that was winding down. And
what was there before?
Chow Baby, is what it was called, Asian buffet type thing. And it didn't take a genius to see that Kroger was being torn down, Murder Kroger. The Claremont Hotel Claremont now was being refurbished, and it was a main corridor for
folks. But in spirit, both of those things will live forever. The Claremont Lounge and Murder Kroger will live in spirit forever.
Well, the Claremont Lounge is still there, but they remodeled the entire hotel, and if you get the opportunity, you need to go check it out.
No, I saw people posted some photos there.
We don't really have boutique hotels in this town, very many, none that really come to mind, so... They have a really unique brand over there, but we ended up on Ponce because it was another main artery to put a sign up and to get some serious brand exposure. Obviously, it's arguably the hottest part of town. Ponce City Market is the gorilla in the room.
All right, I know you got to get out of here, so we're going to finish up with the Atlanta quiz. Are you ready?
Sure. I don't know how well I'll do.
It's all opinion-based.
Okay, sweet. I got those.
What is your go-to Waffle House meal?
I haven't been to a Waffle House in a long time, but when I think of Waffle House, I just think of, like, triple hash browns. Like, I go double or triple on the hash browns, scattered, covered. Not smothered. Smothered's cheese.
Smothered is cheese.
Yeah, I'm out on the cheese. But when I think of Waffle House now, my go-to is caramelized onions with double or triple hash browns. That's what comes to mind.
What is your favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
Ooh. Man. It's always a hard question to answer. I personally... My favorite spot is Buford Highway. So many restaurants out there. You could hit up one every night of the week and get something different and somewhat authentic. Kimball House is a great spot. I love oysters. I love the experience of oysters and where they all come from. Have you been to the Kimball House? It's on the other side of Decatur.
Mm-mm.
They're one of the few restaurants that really embraces the spirit of service. I always find it ironic that service in the South is just not great in most restaurants. And I don't get that. It's kind of contradictory. You think about it, something like Houston's has like the best service. I mean, think about how Johnny on the spot they are compared to a lot of restaurants in town. But Kimball House, anytime folks are waiting on you and getting involved and like to tell a story about the menu and where things come from, that's really cool to me.
Rank these in importance to you. Falcons, Braves, United, Hawks.
For me personally, I'd probably put the Braves at the top. I hate the fact that they're out in Cobb. That broke my heart like it did a lot of people's. I would probably say Braves, Falcons, United, Atlanta United, and then Hawks. That brand needs a resurgence. I've been down to the stadium recently, the Hawks Stadium, and I think they got a lot of cool things coming. They're completely overhauling that arena. So I think that brand's on verge of being rebirthed. And heck, we just drafted a kid from Oklahoma in Trey. So it'll be interesting. He's a very exciting player. So it'll be interesting to see if they can they can jump on. I mean, Atlanta is known, historically known for being a poor sports city, right?
Well, they like fair? To say they like to say that about us.
Well, I think there's
bad fans. We're not like
a lot of dog fans here. I think there's great college football fans here, but professional sports teams fans are not. The passion just isn't. It doesn't seem to be there.
Right.
You know.
What's the the best festival in Atlanta?
My favorite is Music Midtown. I'm sure it's highly debatable, but I go every year and I can't think of any other event where you could literally bounce from stage to stage and get hardcore rap and then rock and roll Lenny Kravitz, you know, next to, you got some old washed up dudes next to some, you know, young whippersnappers and new brands. So I love that. Yeah, it's dirty and it's rainy and it's sweaty, but I mean, hell, that's what a festival is, you know?
I concur. All right, the last question is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. I don't know how much pull do you have? So the question is, can you go up to the Arthur Blanks of the world?
Oh, Arthur Blank is number one on the list. When I put this thing together,
he's number one. Okay,
it was Arthur Blank, Mike Vick, like those are the mayor, right? So I'm getting there. I'm working my way there.
Yeah.
Nate Hibble is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, but you can say, some people say a big name, some people say my friend that's an electrician because he's fascinating. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it just, you
well,
say whatever
I'll
comes to
tell
mind.
You, my mentor, Scott Taylor, he is the president of Carter Properties. And he has been a part of the vision for the new Braves Stadium in Summerhill. He would be a great one just because that is a big part of the changing culture down on the south side of town. And that could go a lot of ways, right? It can go commercial. It can go financial.
New Braves Stadium? Don't we already have a new Braves Stadium?
No, the old Braves Stadium.
Right.
So the redevelopment of, and I hate to put Scott on blast. I don't know if he hears this. My bad, homie. But but I know that those guys are trying to be a part of good and positive change on the south side of town. So
I definitely want to talk to people like that.
You know, I'm talking about the old stadium. It has been repurposed to house Georgia State and a new culture that they're trying to breed with their football program. And I recently saw the Foo Fighters out there. It was a good place to catch an event. They're establishing Summerhill, which is a new community in a part of town that has, I mean, think about it, man.
Yeah, that's I'm like 5 minutes from there.
That's like the forgotten world right there, man.
Oh, yeah.
So my man, Scott, he'd be a good one.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry we wandered all over the place. Is, you know, I'm a little, my employees is tell me I'm stream of consciousness, and sometimes that's really good and sometimes really bad. So I apologize for wandering all over the place, but thank you. I enjoyed it.
Alrighty, that was Nate. Sorry, Nate, that took forever to get up, dude. I had a great chat with you, and as I always say to folks, it's never personal. I just have a lot of good content. I talk to a lot of good people, and sometimes that's how the schedule rolls.